This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions, plural, .org. Thank you so much for joining us. And now, enjoy the podcast. I'm here this evening with Sarah and Mark. It's my pleasure to do the first one of these podcast sessions with a couple. So welcome, Sarah. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Raphael.
Hello.
Yes. Well, you know, life moves very quickly, and when Sarah first got in touch with me, she mentioned that both she and you, Mark, were at that stage in your relationship where you felt like you wanted to move closer, but you also were coming up against some of your own resistances, each of you, and it was a time where you were looking for some guidance to move through that resistance. And when we got on the call this evening and got ready to turn on the recording, she told me that in those, you know, couple weeks or so since she wrote that to me, that both of you have gone through some significant and positive shifts. So I was glad to hear that. And first I want to ask you, Sarah, just to describe, you know, in a paragraph or so, how that shift took place in you. What's happened that's allowed you to feel more free and available for your relationship with Mark?
Well, I think it was taking each chapter in your book, Hearts on Fire, to see how does this apply to me and what am I doing about it. I think each day had to be a progressive motion in a positive direction. So as I read a chapter and then I'd share it with Mark, I'd say, this is what I've learned today. It's so cool because it just applies to everything I've learned. And I did this through each and every invitation and as I traveled through the whole book. And then I just kind of let it settle upon me and felt like I was in a resting place, per se, and had some life busyness going on with a son getting married, and Mark had gone out of town, so it kind of gave me some time to muddle in and think about what I want for myself. It's one of my favorite sayings is, what do you want for yourself? And mm-hmm. I'd ask myself that every day, all the time, and I think my shift came when I realized that what I do want for myself are the attributes that I found in Mark, and I feel like as a couple we could work towards those, even though that there's obstacles with our children and our families in a blended sort of way, then it's just saying that I have an ability and a willingness and a capability to love and love large and overcome the obstacles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, thank you for that. And just to fill in the detail, how long have you and Mark been going out together?
We met last November, so that's about 10 months ago.
Okay, so coming up on a year. And also, I just wanted to ask you to fill in one other thing. When you asked yourself the question, you know, what do I want for myself, you came up with, as you described it, you know, some of the essential attributes of Mark. So could you describe, you know, the main ones for us so, you know, I can really get a clear sense of that?
Well, it to me, my largest requirement perhaps is respect. Love is a bonus, but any relationship between any two people begins and is sustained through respect. So that is one of the main things that he shows me and I show him, and we just have a great ability to communicate. We've had to learn our communication as far as my language is compared to his, and do a lot of cross-checking to see if what I said registered.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely has come to a level of intimate understanding of his feelings and mine, and doing things. We think similarly on many issues and life standards and goals in life, and we just seem to be well suited. He's very kind and understanding, very giving, and I have felt a great safety in speaking to him, and that's one of those places in a not so well marriage that really needed to be healed. So I recall in one of your chapters that, you know, we meet people to heal the past, and this is something I feel has happened with Mark.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So I heard, you know, primary attributes of respect, a willingness to communicate and an ability to communicate, a kindness and understanding, and also a shared set of, you know, values and goals for life. And those, if I heard you right, are kind of the main things that have really drawn you closer to Mark. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, good, beautiful. So, Mark, let's check in with you. What happened for you in these last few weeks that led to your deeper opening to the relationship and to Sarah?
I think it's just a level of commitment. I just have noticed a stronger level of commitment on both of our parts, and just a willingness to talk and to work it out and to communicate, and our communication has improved quite a bit over the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. So was that level of commitment something that you noticed just happening, or did anything in particular bring it about?
I was out of town with my kids for a couple weeks, and I think that made a lot of difference, actually. I think it was just being apart for some time, just both of us just realized that we missed each other while we were gone. And I just noticed since I've been back on that trip, we've had a lot stronger commitment to be together.
Okay, good. And what would be the main attributes that drew you to Sarah and that have you know, shown forth as you've gotten to know her more?
Well, one of the things I look for and like in a relationship is intimacy. And I just emotional intimacy, being able to talk to somebody and have them open up and honestly telling me their feelings, and hold nothing back and just share their true self with me. And Sarah does that very well.
So has that always been the case for you? Have you always liked that, or was that something that evolved over time for you?
I think it's something that evolves over time as you get more familiar with someone, and trust over time is developed. I think it's something that's developed over time rather than just started that way.
Sure, but I also specifically, I was wondering, when you were, you know, having earlier relationships, you know, maybe in your 20s or your 30s, was that also something that really fed you that emotional intimacy, or were you less open to that then than you are now?
It is something I have always wanted, I suppose, because when I was married, I didn't have it at all. And it's something I have sought for in all my relationships.
Yeah, it's really interesting because what you're describing, that openness, that intimacy, the desire to be authentic with your partner and to have that come back to you in return, it's
right.
Something that, you know, most men aren't socialized toward in the same way that women are. So it sounds like, you know, not only has it served you well, but it's also a rare value that you have as a man, and sounds also perfectly suited to Sarah as well from what she was saying. Does that, yeah, that seem right to both of you?
Right.
Yeah, good. So You know, I want to just fill in, you know, a couple of details because you face some life situations that are kind of amplified, you know, more than most couples because, you know, each of you are bringing, you know, as you share worlds with each other, you're each bringing six children. You've each been married before. So that's a huge thing. Plus, you know, the large extended families around those six kids, and everybody has their own thoughts and feelings and opinions. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But I first just want to check in with you and see, as you've deepened into this level of intimacy where you are now, do you notice anything arising that's still, you know, holding you back, a kind of a yeah, but, or a what if, or it's all good except for this, or just even there's a part of me that I don't even understand that's just, you know, hold on, not so fast. Let's start this time with Mark. How about you?
I would say there is, yes. There's mm-hmm. always that hold on, not so fast, because mm-hmm. I want to make sure it's right and feels mm-hmm. good. And I don't have any hesitation with Sarah mm-hmm. in our relationship. And if it were just the two of us, I think we'd have no problems whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just the two of us. We have 12 kids between us, and mm-hmm. that complicates things a lot, as does the extended family and outside influences. But mostly just the kids and sisters and mother-in-laws. And
mm-hmm.
there's
mm-hmm.
so many people that are involved in it, and we're both a package deal, and that complicates it, and it has to be a good fit for all of them.
So
my hesitation would be not me and Sarah, but fitting both packages together.
Okay.
A more complicated undertaking.
Okay, I hear that loud and clear. That it's joining of, you know, planets, not just individuals, almost.
Exactly.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, how about you, Sarah? Anything? I know that you did mention something to me earlier before we were recording around that same concern regarding joining these worlds together. But internally, do you have any places of holding back or somehow scared or not all the way with the program like the rest of you is?
Well, I feel like I'm 100% committed to Mark, and he is the person I'm getting my information from in the security level, in the consistency level, and I know I have my own past issues about abandonment. You know, I've labeled some of those places in my past that have brought me anxiety, and abandonment's one of them. So if I get wind of some kind of withdrawal from him, then it flings me into the fears that I might have felt before. It's not so much that he's inflicting them on me. It's just I have a reaction. So I feel much more equipped to identify those now than I used to, though occasionally a reaction will crop up and I'll feel somewhat stranded maybe inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting for me to note those, but then trying to understand where they're coming from and using the skills of breathing and knowing where in my body this is making me tense. So there's that little child somewhere down there that just doesn't want to be left out or left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a long search for each other. You know, I've been divorced nearly 10 years, and
mm-hmm.
And as a primary relationship, I don't go searching for many, but a select few. So this has been a search that's been well chosen.
mm-hmm. So if I heard you right, that you know that because of, you know, some past history, that abandonment is a trigger for you, and that, you know, even though Mark has really been there and plans to continue to be there, that there can be moments or, you know, experiences between you or comments or whatever that just might set that trigger off, and that you that's what causes you to go back into your fear, and you're using the tools of emotional connection to not take it personally so much, and also to find it in your body so you can kind of surf it to expansion and presence and come back to yourself.
Definitely. Much better skilled at that.
Yeah. And so you haven't found in recent, you know, weeks or so that the trigger of abandonment has actually created separation significantly or conflict between you. It's just been something for you to be with and to bring some healing attention to in yourself.
Yeah, previously if I'd been triggered, I might withdraw into isolate. I would isolate myself.
Mm-hmm.
But recently I've been able to understand it, recognize it, stop my own resistance, and then talk to Mark about it. Then
mm-hmm.
once I've been able to express it to him, then he's understood better my feelings, and so then it feels much more safe to talk to him about it rather than to stomp off and be upset.
Mm-hmm.
So you
found a way to reconnect, and therefore that abandonment trigger doesn't create a pattern in your relationship, and it doesn't have to have an action-reaction kind of thing between the two of you.
Right, and then for him, then he doesn't feel punished, and then he's able to trust me with his feelings so that if he's needing to express himself, that I'm not going to go flying off on my triggers.
Right.
You know, if he's concerned about being a step-parent, and I'm hearing from him some kind of reluctance to join families where we've talked about getting married, then I'm better able to validate his concerns rather than be offended by his concerns.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I did daycare for 8 years. I'm just one that says a mother to all, and
uh-huh.
the daunting task of having his children in our midst doesn't bother me at all. It's just, I'll just love them, and you know, I feel like the open arms of any mother hen. So, but I know to a male's perspective, and some men, not all, may feel like that's just too overwhelming. I don't feel overwhelmed by the amount of children at all because, mm-hmm. one, they're older on either both of our sides, and it's just a kind of a gathering place. I want a gathering place in our home to have all of these children mingle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just would bring me great joy to have that hub.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that was
another perspective. It might seem rather overwhelming.
Yeah, well, it's great to hear all that from you, and I want to just touch base with Mark before we continue, because Sarah was talking a little bit about in the past what might have happened, and you know what she shared was that if she felt triggered by something that you said or did and went into her abandonment fear, then sometimes you would experience her isolation as a kind of a punishment. Does that register with your experience of how that used to go?
Yes. If
uh-huh.
she goes into that pattern, she would just be distant, or as mm-hmm. she has said, she'd be unplugged.
Right.
She just emotionally is withdrawn a little bit and not as friendly or happy or connected as she usually is, actually.
Mm-hmm. And then what would your, let's just say that we're looking backwards to when both of you were getting to know each other, you were a little more tentative and probably a little less skillful with some of these emotional challenges. So back then, when she would unplug,
mm-hmm.
what would that trigger in you?
Neglect or disinterest maybe. Because she just is usually very connected and very happy to be with me. And when she becomes unplugged, she's just very in her own, withdrawn to her own self and not very reaching out and a little more cold. And so to me, that just feels disinterest or neglect or low priority or something like that.
Now she mentioned before that her abandonment triggers, you know, are connected to her past having to do with her father. That feeling of neglect and also of somebody just not really, someone who is important to you and whose nurturing is important to you, to have them, you know, check out, is that something that you experienced in some significance when you were young?
I would think so. I'm the fifth child out of eight, and I think as the middle child, is I had younger siblings and stuff, I think they often got a lot of attention, as the older ones did, and the middle child just doesn't get much attention, and I like a lot of attention.
I
tend to have a lot of attention in my life, and I like that from a spouse.
Got it. So the reason I was asking you both about that is because I know that you had, you know, recently read the book Setting Your Heart on Fire, and that in the book there was a talk about how virtually every relationship has one or two central themes, and part of recognizing those themes is also understanding that, you know, we've been brought together with an opportunity to become mindful of those themes and to actually heal through them. And it seems like, if I'm hearing correctly, that in the earlier time of your relationship, as you were getting to know each other, this was a theme that would play out, that something that you said, Mark, might be interpreted as some kind of abandonment, and that would trigger Sarah to withdraw, and then you would experience Sarah's withdrawal as an abandonment or as neglect, and then that would cause you to be concerned as well, because of your own trigger. And so this could continue until the two of you would find a way to open back up and come together.
Right.
And it sounds like through really your mutual willingness to communicate and to apply some skills to that theme, that you have really been able to keep it from, you know, perpetuating too long or from escalating and drawing you into either, you know, fresh conflict or, you know, unnecessary distance. That it's not that it's not there anymore or that it can't show up, but it doesn't sort of rear its head in the same kind of threatening way that it did earlier. Would that be accurate?
Yes. Earlier in the relationship, we had those very things happen, and we don't argue much. We don't have a lot of problems, but when we get into that state, we both just withdraw, I suppose, and we just place distance between us to the point where we don't see each other for a little while, or it just we just create distance between us.
Right. Sarah, does that sound accurate to you also, the transition from how it used to be to how it is now?
Yes. Yeah, we have had several series of separateness throughout these 10 months, and in those times, each of us separately evaluating where we wanted the relationship to go, and yet there was always a loving string between us that was, it was just unfathomable to let go of him completely. I knew that I didn't want to let him go, and yet I didn't have the skills to understand my own stuff or where to place it. I know what's going on inside, and Mark's real good at extracting some of those tender places, and he creates a safe environment to have those places exposed. So the vulnerability has gotten much easier to display, knowing that he's a safe receptacle. So in these transitions, though, when we've been in our separate places, our children have witnessed this fluctuation without hardly any knowledge of why, but so they are cautious to him, and perhaps his children are cautious to me, because they just want to know if these two adults really have what it takes to make a good relationship. And we've been quite determined to show them that we can.
Mm-hmm.
Moving through these phases, it's just hard to children to have them understand love in the later years. So I think
Got
it's
it.
Different than love in your 20s because it's just it's a different feel, but
yeah.
It's much more endearing in your 40s or and maybe much more endearing in your 50s and 60s. You know, it's just a growth pattern that we're trying to let them know that we genuinely care about each other. They just don't want to see the now you're dating and now you're not, and you know, it's been tough on
right.
them,
so,
but also tough on us.
Yeah. So one thing I want to do is just be a cheerleader for both of you and just express my, you know, admiration for you that you have been able to make this shift. I just think that's really great and rare, and want to honor you for that. I also want to suggest to you one small thing, which is that I can tell that both of you have the possibility of being reinvigorated through separation, you know, as well as through intimacy. And I know sometimes, especially maybe for you, Mark, in a situation where it could be overwhelming with all the new possible kids and such, to be able to have some of that time apart. But to have it without having lost the intimacy, to, in other words, to structure significant amount of separation or alone time between the two of you while you're actually doing well and not because something has triggered you, that could be a really important element in really securing these gains that you had going forward. Does that make sense?
Yes, uh-huh.
How about for you, sir?
You, when you're saying structure these time away from the kids, are you talking about the two of us structuring time away from the kids or me alone away from them?
Actually, good question. I want to be more clear. What I meant was that in the past, the two of you, Sarah and Mark, have gone through fluctuations of closeness and separation that
right.
were really a part of the triggering that you have really been able to mostly move past. And what I'm suggesting is that you make sure that you build into your relationship with one another periods of aloneness, each of you, not from your kids or not necessarily from each other's kids, but especially from one another, but not because it's a problem, but because that's also something that can really strengthen the bond between the two of you. And so maybe what I'm saying by extension is finding alone time for either one of you, which, you know, might entail having some time away from kids. But the most important thing is just nurturing your solitude as a way of also nurturing the intimacy of the relationship. Is that more clear?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And does that make sense?
Yeah, and I understand it, yet it... I mean, we've seen each other nearly every day possible
mm-hmm.
because of our close proximity. And so I guess I'm feeling like I understand what you're saying. It would just, it would almost hurt, I guess, to be purposely away from him. So maybe
uh-huh.
what you're saying, in that hurt, you bond.
Well,
it's not
I'm saying
a hurt
something
that says I'm withered and less without him. It just is a connectiveness. I like to feel the connectiveness.
I'm saying something very much like that, especially for somebody who sometimes craves contact to avoid the feeling of abandonment. You want to make sure that as you are drawn toward each other, it's always from a place of openness and expansion and freedom, as opposed to habit, and certainly as opposed to coming from a resistance to an emotion. So if you sometimes might actually be served by recharging yourself, spending some time on your own, but you jump over that because, you know, there's almost a compulsion inside, let's be together, let's spend time together. Sometimes in the moment that's very satisfying, but in the end it creates its own problems, you know, because then, you know, you're a little too close and then things start to kind of, you know, crowd in on you and then you need some space, but it can sometimes be a more reactive space. And there's a poet, Rilke, who talks very specifically about this, the idea that one of the greatest things that we can do for one another is to protect each other's solitudes. So if 9 times out of 10, when you both felt the draw to be together, you were together because you can be and because it's a blessing. And if 1 time out of every 10, you know, you said to each other, you know what, we don't really need to be together right now, and we've been spending a lot of great time together, let's each of us go in and recharge and let our intention be to come back all the more available to one another as a result of having spent that time apart. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm suggesting.
So would a person, once we've been married, do you still want to create that solitude?
I think absolutely. I think that on a very deep personal level, there's a way in which we are always alone. And I don't mean that as a negative. It's just that nobody can ever be inside of our subjective consciousness. And while it can be beautiful to have a big family and to be identified as a caregiver in that family and always be surrounded by ones who are needing something or wanting something or even just enjoying connection, you are both really, you know, blessed with that kind of experience, and other people, you know, might just long for just a little bit of what you have a lot of. And so there's a way in which it can be a challenge for both of you in the midst of all that blessing to come back just a little bit in the other direction and touch those places in you that actually need some solitude in order to be heard, in order to, you know, breathe a sigh or to get their needs met in a way that aren't going to happen, you know, in the role as a mother or a father or even as a partner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How does that register for you, Mark?
Well, both of us have chosen to spend all our free time together, and we do spend an enormous amount of time together, and we always have. And that's different. That's a different than what we've done, for sure. But I can understand what you're saying. It's just that'll be something different for us.
And as I mentioned before, you know, it's something to experiment with. You know, and if it was 1 time out of 10, you know, that's a pretty small fraction of all the time that you can spend together. And, you know, see how that is for you. I don't think there are any rules that apply to every person or every couple. And every once in a while, you know, you'll hear a couple, you know, turn 100 and say, you know, we met each other when we were 13 years old and we've never spent more than 12 hours apart ever since then, and it's the greatest thing ever. And you see those people and, you know, you think, God bless them, and it seems like that was right for them. I know for me, for better or for worse, I feel like I'm enough of a complicated person, and I think that's true of most people. And what I mean by that is that, by complicated, that there are different parts of me that want very different things. And so what I'm suggesting is that, you know, you guys are really wanting to be together, and that's a beautiful thing, and why turn away from that? And it's always really helpful to just create a little space to see who else is in there, who else might actually be fed and even be more committed to the relationship if those parts know that they're also going to get some of their time too.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the picture that I'm trying to paint. Does that sound clear, Mark?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, good. Well, what I want to do now is move with both of you to this really interesting question. It seems like your own intimacy has really grown and, you know, into new dimensions. And the people around you haven't necessarily caught up to where you are.
That's right.
And also because they haven't been in the process of your growth and change. So let's start with you, Mark. What do you think is the biggest challenge? You know, is it is it adults? Is it kids? And, you know, what are the, I think earlier, and I think this was before we started recording, Sarah was telling me that the two of you call it the white noise. So what is the most challenging part right now for you of the white noise of all of the other people around you with their own needs and expectations?
Oh, the most challenging part would be the kids that live in her home, because they would be the kids that live in our home. The extended family and friends outside of that are much lesser degree influencing as the kids that live in the home. So the kids that live in the home, if they're unhappy with me being there, that by far is a more significant factor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and where do you, you know, just on your own, where do you sense they are in terms of that possibility?
Well, I think there was a time where most of them didn't like me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I think they're in an evolving place. They're incipient. They're in a progressive state. But they have a ways to go, I would think. I would think most of them still are not that accepting of me at this point.
Mm-hmm. And what do you sense, you know, if you just had to kind of wrap up their biggest complaints about you, you know, what's wrong with that guy, Mark? What do you think they would say?
I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm. Well, they probably think I'm cautious when I'm there. I don't really, their dad is very outgoing and boisterous. I'm not very boisterous and loud. I'm much quieter, totally different personality than what their dad is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never going to be even similar to what their dad is, and I don't really fit the picture of, I suppose, what they see as a dad.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to check in with you about that, Sarah. I'll ask you about your own greatest challenges with the white noise in a moment, but just to reflect on you know, what Mark was saying, do you see what he was describing in a similar way, or would you add something or change something in your perspective about that?
I would agree with Mark, and I'm glad he was able to voice it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think every child just wants to know that, well, my children in this case just want to know that Mark loves me.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen him there, and then they've seen him not there. And mm-hmm. they just want the consistency to know that he cares about me enough. And I think they want to know clearly from him that they matter to him. And it's been, I understand Mark being cautious around them and not being too pushy and getting in their face too much to say, I'm just going to replace your dad. I appreciate that position. But they may translate it as disinterest or judgmental, where he's a little bit quieter around them. So we've wanted to create experiences with them where they can relax and feel the fun, and we've taken them to play tennis and go on walks where it's calm and collected and cool, and he can be interactive. Sometimes they allow him to be interactive with them, and sometimes they don't. So I think it's a big part of a triangle where I need to help prepare them to be accepting of their mother, who is loving someone besides their father.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to be a part of the triangle to be outgoing and joyful with them so that they feel his concern for them. Plus, they have to be as willing to be interactive and accept his caring. So to get these three things in alignment has been kind of challenging.
Mm-hmm. So there's a piece that you added to the picture that I want to just jump back for a moment and check in with Mark about. What Sarah was saying, I believe, is that the way in which you're different than their dad, Mark, is that you are more quiet and more reserved by nature. And what I think Sarah was saying is that that's a neutral quality. In other words, that has its great pluses in circumstances. Sometimes it could have its minuses. But it's just part of who you are, and we all have those traits. But in this situation, that reserve can sometimes be interpreted as either a distance or a lack of caring or a judgment. Through no intention of your own, and probably you might be feeling even sometimes the opposite of that, but does that register with you that sometimes that's how they might take your more reserved nature?
Yes, although I've gone out of my way to try to talk to these kids, especially the older ones,
mm-hmm.
and they often just ignore me. They don't even know that I'm there, and they act like when I approach them that they don't want anything to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I become reserved, and I don't want to step on their toes and push them and make them uncomfortable, and I don't want to walk in and make them like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over time that they will warm up with me is what I'm hoping, although I haven't seen any of that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I've attempted, well, most of the times that I've attempted, I usually get just resistance and cold. They're not
mm-hmm.
very warm and friendly to me.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. And a couple times Sarah mentioned that she thought that that was partially or maybe even in large part because of the pattern that you guys were running earlier in the relationship, that maybe they're protective of her also because they've seen you there and not there. Does that seem right to you also?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So part of it may just be, you know, the stuff of any kids would go through with divorce and, you know, a new partner. Some of it may be that they can interpret your reserve to some degree, the way we're describing it. And then on top of that, they may be extra watchful, you know, and protective of mom.
Correct.
Because of the earlier stages of the relationship.
Yeah, they seem to be extra protective and don't give me much of a chance, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I agree with Mark completely. He has extended, and they have received him not so politely. So I have stepped up my game with them and talking to them about what I expect in respect from them
mm-hmm.
and what they, what adults are entitled to in kindly behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had a misbehaving adult, then children need to discern that, but Mark has been everything in kindness and politeness to them. So I've worked hard with each one to introduce Mark's kindnesses and his carings
mm-hmm.
and to turn their crankiness into interpreting it just a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a challenge, but it's also been helpful to have them see it in another light.
Are you, Sarah, would you say that your kids in general, apart from this situation, do they tend to be kids who can be pretty empathetic?
I would say no. I'd say that they are also somewhat reserved,
mm-hmm.
depending on which one you've got. They've all been very loving to me. They've all been very protective, yes, of me, and perhaps I've created this little safe place with them that they feel like they have to be in, and yet now here Mom's breaking out of her shell and wants to break out on her own and cleave unto another, and that's upsetting their world. So I can
mm-hmm.
see that I didn't prepare them well, but I wasn't prepared for some time to receive another either. So
mm-hmm.
it's been a process for me, and yet they haven't gotten to process like I did. They've just had to kind of stumble along behind, and
mm-hmm.
it's been a good thing to teach them so that, I mean, the only thing I want my kids to do is to treat me with respect, which Mark has helped me see that they haven't,
mm-hmm.
and in that respect, I want them to know how to respect their mother, but also know how to respect their future spouses. So
mm-hmm.
it's kind of doing double time on helping them understand where I'm at with Mark, but then understanding where they need to be as their own individual whole people.
Mm-hmm.
And the older ones, you know, they're just going to have to catch up to that on their own. I don't know how much. I can only teach them by example at this point. And my younger ones are going to hear a different story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So again, I want to just, you know, chime in here as a cheerleader for both of you. It really feels like you're bringing a lot of conscious awareness to this whole process and trying to see it from all the angles that you can, which is wonderful. And I actually have every confidence from our conversation that everything will work out the way that it needs to. But in terms of helping that move along as smoothly as possible, I'm wondering, Sarah, have they been open to hearing your process through the relationship with Mark? Do they are they the kind of kids who can give you, you know, 5 or 10 minutes to tell them, you know, why this relationship is important, how it's made you feel, what those earlier distances were about, and particularly what you've been learning of recent times, both of you, in terms of, you know, seeing your triggers and opening up and through them to be able to become more connected to yourself and then therefore to each other? Is that the kind of stuff that without too much, you know, seeming, you know, quote-unquote psychobabble, but just real authentic communication that they would be interested in hearing?
Yes. I proposed my own analogy on that at one point. I am from German descent, and so Germans commonly have somewhat rigid emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been raised in a kind of an emotional punishment theme throughout my life.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I've decided to learn Italian, Italians are much more fluid and open and
mm-hmm.
expressive, then the people around me, including my children, who I taught German or this,
mm-hmm.
It's not to put the German people in any one place, it's just an analogy, then because they understand German, I've taught them German, now that I want to speak Italian, they just think it's a little bit loopy. And so my extended family somewhat reject my newfound expression, and
mm-hmm.
my kids are just kind of watching me like, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be punishing each other, aren't we? Because that's what I taught them. So
uh-huh.
the close down, the shutdowns were all taught because that's what I would do. I would withdraw
uh-huh.
under duress. And so I've taught them to withdraw under duress. So their reluctance to mark could be translated in that's the language they learned, and they just don't know what to do with it because they haven't been exposed to a new language, which I am trying to do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to help. I hope to turn a tide. I hope to enrich them with what I'm finding. It is difficult in teenage years to find them home enough to do these teaching moments, and
mm-hmm.
it's usually entrapping them in my car to get to talk to them. But it's just processing and effort, and every little time. And I mean, I absolutely use my spirit to tune me into when those times are the best times.
Right.
And
so
I absolutely don't.
So what I'm getting.
This subject.
What I'm getting, Sarah, is that one of their primary motivations in the past has been to protect you, and then, you know, probably to some degree to protect their dad, even if that's unconscious, and then also to protect themselves, because after all, you know, this huge change is possibly going to enter into our lives, and they know how to do the stoic protecting thing. They know how to do the standoffish thing, or even
yeah.
the distancing thing, as you described. And what they might not know how to do so well is even just on their own in private, opening up to what that stoicism is keeping them from within themselves.
Right.
So it sounds like, you know, there is something that both through talking to them and also through example you can share you know, really letting them know that you're learning how to take care of yourself in a healthier way.
Right.
And that's part of your relationship with Mark as well. And, you know, you want that for them as well as for you, but it looks a little different than what they're used to. So,
exactly true.
Yeah, and but the most important thing is that if they are standoffish out of self-protection and also out of protection of you, they can learn a lot from you, you know, expressing to them how while you appreciate, you know, their need to protect you and also maybe to protect themselves,
right,
that becoming more Italian, as you describe it, is actually going to be better for them no matter what happens between you and Mark.
Right.
That they lose out in every direction, you know, if they just distance themselves, which is really, in some ways, we could call it the family legacy.
Right.
And there is a way that, you know, you can share with them with a lot of passion, because I know you feel it, that one of the best gifts that you can give to them is to not pass on that legacy unconsciously and to give them the tools to be present to their own emotional truth and then do with it whatever they want. But just to know what they're really feeling and to be able to express what they're really feeling when it's appropriate, you know, that would be one of the greatest gifts that you could give them. And it's probably a gift that you wouldn't have been able to give them if you and Mark didn't go through your own journey together.
Absolutely. I believe that, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you feel that we need to gain their consent before we marry, or is it a process of gaining their acceptance and then to marry? Because something in me just says, forge ahead, do our plans as we see fit, and they will follow along in due time.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I address that, I just want to bring Mark back into the discussion and find out, Mark, as Sarah and I were dialoguing about the Germans and the Italians and the kids, was there anything that you wanted to bring to that discussion or anything that you saw differently that might be helpful to add?
No, I think she articulated that very well. I agreed with everything she said.
Okay, good. So what I want to say about your question specifically, Sarah, is that I think every situation is different. I trust both of you in your wisdom to, you know, evolve into the best answer for each moment and each passage of your relationship. But what I do want to do, rather than giving you advice about that, is kind of go back to Mark on this, because, you know, right now you're asking the question, Sarah, which way do you sense it should go, Raphael? I'm kind of sensing one way, and that was, you know, forge ahead and the kids will follow. But I think, Mark, you had expressed some reluctance about that earlier, you know, that I'm not sure I want to hear more from you about it, but you had said, you know, that clearly the biggest challenge is the kids, because if they don't want it and they're in the house and I would be joining this family and be in their house, that's the biggest issue. So we're all agreeing as we talk about it, that's the biggest issue. But where are you on the question of, you know, how far they would need to come around before you would feel that, you know, going forward was the right thing to do?
Well, I know what Sarah has said, that if we got married now, the kids would follow.
Mm-hmm.
But my internal feelings would think the kids are not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
They would need a little time, and she has an older one who's 21. I don't think he would be ready at all if we got married right now. And
mm-hmm.
No, I think if it were just me and Sarah, I would get married immediately. But
mm-hmm.
with all the kids, I don't think they're ready yet, no.
Mm-hmm. And for you guys, getting married means, on the most practical level, that you would live together.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
And are there other, some of this might be personal, you don't have to go into it with me, but are there other significant aspects of marriage that are different from, since you're spending so much time together now, you know, other than, you know, the sanctioning of the commitment, the deepening of the bond that comes from marriage. But in terms of practicalities, we know that the huge thing is that you would be moving in, Mark. Is there anything else that is important to mention about how things would change?
Well, I think a lot of things would change, and we would be acting married rather than singly, spending more time together, and certainly physically and sexually we would be together where we're not now, and just sharing our lives together would change drastically. And if I were in the home, there's so much resistance, I don't think I'd be happy there just yet.
So that's another piece of it, which is really important, and that's, you know, nobody is made of stone, and nobody likes to be where they're not wanted, and, you know, it could really take its toll on even the most gentle or generous of spirit to, you know, consistently be in that situation.
Right, and I think eventually it would wear between us, too. It would wear on her as well as it would wear on me, and if the kids didn't eventually come around to an accepting state, I don't think any of us would be happy to do that.
So I'm curious about this. Whether, Sarah, it was with you and Mark and the kids, or just with you and the kids, have you considered, or maybe have you already, just had a discussion about this very thing that we're talking about?
We've attempted at one point during one of the more distant segments. Well, it was between distant segments that we tried to discuss with them the future we wanted to build, and they just weren't for hearing that, so it wouldn't have accomplished anything. And it left us both frustrated. I do feel like it's a time where we need to sit with them and discuss our intentions for each other, how I feel about him, how he feels about me, and what we want to do as a family. We do know that it's wise for Mark and I to join together and claim a different home than the one I reside in and the one that he does, that we together have our own home. And that it moves the children, which again is introducing change and resistance in them, but that for him and I as a united front would be better in our own new location, not so much city-wise, but in the house. So.
And that feels right also to you, Mark?
What's that?
That feels right to you also?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, she has a 21-year-old son who lives at home and thinks he's the man of the house, and he runs the roost there, and there is no place for me there with him in that house, so we would absolutely have to have our own place.
I understand. So I heard you saying that the time is nigh to have that kind of conversation again, Sarah, and Mark, do you feel that way also?
Not so much, no. We did try to have that conversation with him before, and this 21-year-old son wouldn't even come into the room and talk to us, and neither would the other kids. Actually, they all left, and we couldn't even have a family meeting together with them all sitting down in the same place because nobody wanted to hear what we had to say. I don't think that he would be any more willing to talk to us now than he was then.
Well, coming back around, Sarah, to your question and maybe addressing it in a sideways direction, you and Mark are both, you know, wonderful people who are deserving of love and intimacy and partnership. And you have found each other, and you have gone through some significant trials together to become close enough to each other to decide that you are right, you know, for one another to be married. No one should stand in the way of that. And it would be actually a disservice to your kids of any age if they were allowed to stand in the way of that. So the fact that you and Mark are, whenever you guys decide that, you know, it's official between the two of you that you want to be married, just between the two of you, not having to do with when the kids are ready or what the kids may do or what their resistance is, when you decide that the time is right, and maybe that's already come, that, you know, Sarah and Mark want to be married.
Right, that time's already come.
Okay.
Between me and Sarah, the time has already come, yeah.
Okay. So it's really important that you recognize that, you know, that's what's true for you, and that it's not going to help anybody, excuse me, to somehow hide or delay or soft sell that truth, because the most important thing you can teach your kids is to be real and authentic and to follow your heart, which is exactly what you're doing. So what I would say, Sarah, you know, coming back to your question, is not about exactly the how or exactly the when, but what I would say is that the kids need to know that it's important for every adult to seek loving partnership for the greatest well-being for, you know, him or herself and for a family. And you've been alone a long time, and you've done that, you've been patient, you've found the right person for you, and you know that because you've been together for a year and let everything take its course, and the two of you are going to get married, right? That's a decision that you've already made.
Right.
But you and Mark both take the kids and their own feelings into the highest, you know, levels of importance for both of you. And it's a really loving and spacious question to ask is, knowing that we're going to get married, what can we do, you know, with you all as a family to help make that as easy and as good for everyone as possible? You know, each kid who's involved, you know, what do you want? What do you need? What can we do that is not going to dishonor ourselves or dissuade us from the path that we're choosing, but that can allow you to feel as good about it as possible?
Right.
You know, what are your concerns? What are your reservations? What do you do, what don't you like about Mark? Or what do you think you know about him that you're not sure about? Or, you know, just to create a circumstance where, first of all, there's a boundary, right? You know, because those the kids, you know, they can leave the room. And, you know, that's just what teenagers will do or young adults might do. But the boundary here is, this is what we're going to do. And they can't run away from that.
Right.
But what you're saying is that this is what we're going to do. And within that, we want to love you and cherish you and care about you and nurture you in this as the best we can. So the more you help us do that, you know, the easier and the smoother all of this is going to come. The more that you just react to that, if that's your choice, the more difficult it's going to become.
Right.
So, you know, that's what feels like it's going to serve everyone the best. And also, I want to come back to Mark in a moment, that if they know that, and they also know that both of you are expressing real concern about them, and you haven't come to them with, you know, a date and a plan, you know, and the house goes on the market here and I'm moving in there and, you know, now we're sometimes going to have to share a bathroom and now we're going to, you know, make social plans together and all this sort of stuff which would be brand new for them, I'm thinking that you would be able to continually assess the situation, watch how things shift as they get more and more comfortable with that, make some incremental changes that might allow you to see that things are shifting so that maybe it would start to feel safer and timelier for you to go forward with the next steps. So I'm wondering, how does that sit with you as a possibility?
How does it fit with me?
Yeah.
I totally understand that. I agree with it. Inside my heart, I just see that as a difficult thing to do. I don't see that these kids are going to be that accepting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to change their belief about me. And
mm-hmm.
I see it as a challenge.
Well, let me ask you a question. Just from the perspective of being emotionally authentic, you know, that you've taken on in your relationship with Sarah and, you know, some of which you've drawn from the work that, you know, I shared with you in my book. If you knew that Sarah's kids were never going to warm up to you,
mm-hmm.
were never going to accept you, it, could that possibly keep you from marrying Sarah?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the kids are living in the home, then that's an influence that would keep us from getting together, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about that, Sarah?
Older and grown, that would be a different thing. But as mm-hmm. long as they're living in the house, yeah, that's a major influence.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, how do you feel about that?
It's a difficult thing to hear because I'm maybe in that romantic sense of love conquers all.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Mark needs the acceptance where he resides, and he wants to live in a place of joy when he comes in, that he wants to feel joyful with me and with me with kids in that home. I understand that. I also believe that my kids have the capability of accepting him. They just got to see that he accepts them. There's
mm-hmm.
a two-way street here on how they're feeling about him and how they can feel about him, as long as there's effort on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And the reluctance on their part, obviously it's going to be stemmed in fears that they don't understand themselves, but as we as adults may be able to guide them and teach them and be examples to them of a better existence for them. You know, they
mm-hmm.
it's like them saying, well, we don't want anything to change, but things could be much better than they are now with a full family setting. So
okay. So I want to just ask something kind of specific about this that connects to both of you. Sarah, first of all, would you say that you have the kind of control in the house, so to speak, that, you know, if you make rules, the kids follow them?
yes and no. I make rules and the kids test them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will follow upon reward. So there needs to be more respect and there needs to be more control as far as structure. It's been difficult as a working single parent to maintain the control in absence.
mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
When I am home, I know they love me. They don't always respect me. They have issues of being disrespectful, disobedient, and yet once I get on their case or that I expect compliance, then they will give it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
to go there.
So here's my question for you. I want to just float an idea. And I want to hear from both of you, you know, what you think about it. I'm not attached to it. It's just really a kind of a brainstorm that comes from where you're both describing things are from your own perspective. So, and also I want to back this up by saying that I know that you both share a religious faith, so you're part of the same church.
Yeah.
So, you know, what would happen if you said together, you know, we're getting married. We haven't set a date. It's our deepest intention that by the time we get married, that all the people involved, especially the children that would be living in our house, will come to a place of acceptance and maybe even an opening to the possible goodness of it, you know, although it might take some time for that actually to come around. And what we want to do is we want to establish a series of times, you know, some talks, some get-togethers where we can, you know, do our best to try to work out everything that is important between us so that all people would be comfortable, and then when we set a date, it, you know, everyone would be ready for it.
Right.
If we can't do that together, then we're going to need to do that with help. And, you know, if we can't do it, you know, just here in our home, you know, sometimes just Sarah with you and the kids, and sometimes with Mark and Sarah and the kids, then we're going to get counseling to do it. You know, and I don't know if there is a good counseling system set up within your church community, but I'm sure that if not right in there, then as an extension of it, it shouldn't be hard to find. And what I'm getting at is that, you know, we're getting married. That's one thing the kids don't have a choice about. The next thing is that we're going to lead you as responsible grown-ups in a process that's going to allow you to share all your hopes, fears, concerns, you know, pains, resistances about this, with the intention that everybody gets to be heard and everybody gets to feel closer and everybody gets to feel more respected. And we can't control the outcome of such a process, but we can say that as long as you live in this house, that it's a requirement that you participate.
Right.
And my question to you, first of all, Sarah, and then I'll jump over to you, Mark, is do you see that as a viable possibility?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would love to approach it in that manner so that they have inclusion, and the intention is to include, and then they can choose their compliance or not, but that there is an expectation that they participate.
Okay, good. How about you, Mark? What do you make of that?
Oh, I agree. I think the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, part of what both of you have responded to in the, you know, the work that brought us together was a commitment to be present, you know, first of all to yourself and your emotional reality moment by moment, and then also, you know, present to each other and to those around you. And one of the things that happens when we get that present is we realize that we don't ever know what's going to happen next. You know, we can't predict what the future will hold. We start with an intention, and then we just keep staying connected to the situation moment by moment. And it sounds like what both of you are willing to do is to state your commitment to each other, to the kids, in the form of an engagement or however you might call it, that you're also willing to say to them that you want to work with them in the timing of it to allow them to feel as good as possible, and that you also want to establish a process by which everybody gets to air, you know, what they need to air, hear one another, come closer, and that you're also both willing to say this is a requirement. You know, if it doesn't work one way, it'll work another way. But it's a requirement, and that's where there's no choice. So from the kids' point of view, there's no choice. Sarah and Mark are getting married, and, you know, also Sarah and Mark are bringing the kids who are going to be living in the house into an official kind of a process to help them get as comfortable as they can with that choice. You both, I stated it again, you know, in some detail for a reason. I wanted you to hear it again and make sure it feels like, yeah, that's really right for you.
Oh, absolutely. I can see that my thinking mostly of my 14-year-old who has found his voice in agreement or disagreement, but he still has enough presence to listen to me, and when I deliver a suggestion or an expectation of him, he will listen to me mm-hmm. as long as it doesn't get confrontational. And so I think him in particular will be the one who has not so much the resistance but the curiosity of how this could work.
Mm-hmm.
My 21-year-old seems to have his own pain and his own issues that he has harbored
mm-hmm.
For some time, and his response will probably be to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
And in that is also his choice. Yet, as a mother bird would, he is in a season where he needs to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any problem in inviting him to make his choices, but that he won't be he won't sway my choices, which I am much qualified to make.
So if we do something to speak about that in brass tacks, if he chooses not to participate as an independent adult, that's his choice, but he won't be able to live in the home if you guys go ahead and get married.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So as we're speaking about that, you know, with more specificity, Mark, is that continuing to sound like a path forward that would work for you?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I think that what I'm also thinking about, Mark, is that really that you still can have, you know, great choice in this because if, you know, you announce this as your intention, we're engaged to be married and this is the process, and along the way you start finding out things that are really untenable to you about, you know, how the kids are going to respond, even if they are in a counseling kind of environment or something like that, you know, Sarah's going to see it too. You're both going to continually reassess, and, you know, you're not under this kind of plan. You're not signing on to something that is a trap.
Because
you wouldn't have to say it's time either if it wasn't really time.
Right.
But something about both of you having the conviction to choose love and to choose joy and also to respect everyone else around you in the process, I think is going to start to make a shift in them that is really going to make the difference and then ultimately allow you, Mark, to feel like, okay, yes, we have a threshold of connection here that we can build on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my response or my feelings when you were talking was I reject the idea that I'm going to let my child, my young child, to choose my partner.
Mm-hmm.
Because his behavior, if he's seen that his behavior pushes Mark away from the family unit, then I just don't want him to have that power. And I want to work with Morgan, with this child, enough to say, you don't have the power. You will not choose for me. You will not dictate my time and actions that I choose to spend with Mark in family balance.
And there's a way to look at that too, that, you know, whether or not he can hear it at his age is a question, but you know, we really teach our children more than anything else by example. And, you know, even in situations where I work with couples and one person is thinking that, you know, they're needing to get a divorce for all the right reasons, but they just can't bear to do that to their kids. You know, one of the things that comes up a lot is what you teach your kids by staying in a situation which is untenable or which is disrespectful or which isn't in service of, you know, the highest good of you and the people around you. So by parallel in this situation, it's not maybe so much what you will or will not allow him to do. You can see it more as if you were to let him keep you from your greatest happiness, you would be abdicating a certain self-responsibility, and, you know, that is a teaching that, you know, would make things very difficult for him later on. I mean, as much as he might hate certain parts of it in the process, there's a way in which you would be demonstrating something to him that could be invaluable later on in him really claiming his own right to happiness.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what I see is that, and this is a way I can kind of sum up our conversation, I think, if you can bring the gains that you've made individually and as a couple forward now into the community surrounding you, and especially, you know, with these kids who will be living in the home with you, then everything will be fine. So this conversation is really a natural extension of all the work that you've done on yourself and in relationship. And if you come from that place of understanding and emotional integrity, then most of what we're talking about is actually going to just seem like all part of the same process.
Yeah.
Not something foreign or different, but really the next step in what you've already begun.
Right.
Does that make sense to you, Mark?
Yes.
Good, good. Well, I've just, you know, thoroughly enjoyed talking to you both, and I've said it before, but I'm just a great admirer of you and a cheerleader of your process, and I want you to know that as you go forward, you know, you can't get rid of me. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm here to be a resource for you. So I would love to hear how things go, even just in terms of progress reports. If you have any questions along the way, I would love for you to email me. And if there are ever any times where, you know, we need to get on the phone because there's a particular challenge and an outside perspective might, you know, be of service to you, I would always hope that you would, you know, take up my invitation and communicate with me. That would be a great blessing.
Oh, I would love that too.
Okay. So do either of you have any comments or questions that will allow you to feel more complete, or do you feel that we traveled where we needed to travel in this call?
Oh, I feel wonderful. I had these concerns addressed and feel like it's in a better place. I had a rise of emotion at one point and then knew what to do with it and got to put it in a positive tilt.
Good. How about you, Mark?
Well, I think it was good for us to sit close together and open up to each other about in an honest fashion, and listen to your comments and your guidance was very helpful for us and gives us a new direction to look forward into the future.
Great. Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much, and I look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.